entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Yes, it is. Hello there. A good Sunday morning to you on this 21st day of April. A happy Easter if you're celebrating that. A joyous Passover. Or just hope you're having a good Sunday. Any of those are possibilities. Rich Kimble here, along with Kerry Haskell. It is the Best of Downtown, brought to you by our friends at Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Easter Bunny arrived at our house this morning.
All kinds of treats left.
Yeah. I miss... I'm the only person... I'm not a fan of Peeps. Do you like Peeps?
I do.
I mean, they're okay. They're all right. I like them a little bit stale, myself. No Peeps in our house. The boy is not... I think it requires a more complicated palate than the average five-year-old has. It's all about chocolate and jelly beans, of course.
My daughter was always freaked out by their texture.
Oh, sure.
When she was younger. Yeah. She got over that at some point, but around your boy's age, she wouldn't eat them because they felt funny.
I miss, and I'm sure they probably stopped making it, or if they didn't, they should have, because I'm sure it's terrible for the environment, that god-awful Easter grass. You remember that?
I do.
I don't know. Is that still out there? I don't know.
I think the plastic has been replaced by sort of recycled
paper
grass.
That would be much better. Anyway, whatever you're doing, hope you're having a wonderful day. This should make it better this next hour. We've got some terrific conversations. Actor, storyteller, and great friend of the show, Stephen Tobolowsky, coming up in just a little bit. Sean McDonough, one of the great broadcasters out there, back doing Red Sox games for the first time in forever. We talk with Sean about how that came about and get his thoughts on the early season struggles of the team. But we get things underway by, well, another great friend of Downtown. We can't even figure out how many times he's been on the show because his appearances predate our website, but probably closing in on 22 appearances here on the program over the years for John O'Hurley.
They date back at least to 2012. I did the search of the archives.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's the first. The oldest one I found in the archives was like November of 2012.
That sounds about right, coming on to promote the Thanksgiving Day dog show. And that's what we talked with John about the other day. He's back again on your television this afternoon, 1 o'clock on NBC TV. It's the Beverly Hills Dog Show. And we talked about that with great friend of the program, John O'Hurley. My five-year-old, very much looking forward to the Easter Bunny, but for a lot of us, we're much more excited to see you and David Fry and the crew back again for what's become another wonderful holiday tradition.
Well, we're trying to take some of the success that we've had on Thanksgiving with the National Dog Show, presented by Purina, with the audience now this year of over 32 million. And we're hoping some of that will drip over onto another family day, which, of course, is Easter Sunday. And we hope that come 1 o'clock Eastern time that America will glue itself to their sofas and watch their favorite thing, which is their dogs.
There's no question about that. And why do you think it is that these dog show broadcasts have become so very popular, even among people who don't own and love dogs?
Well, I think people are looking for a break on television, Rich. I honestly do. I think there's such a bad nerve running through the country right now. But people are just looking for some place where they can just sit back and go, ah. And the dog show is very much like that. There's something for everybody, whether you're 4 or you're 94. It gives something that everybody can have, a stake in, if you will. And, of course, you hopefully will be rooting for your alma mater factor there on the sofa with you, your family dog. But we'll have 2,000 of the top dogs in the country and 180 different breeds all vying for best in show.
Now, last year, if I recall, it was the Wire Fox Terrier that won the whole thing.
Who went on to win Westminster, and that was a quite a year, and that dog is now retired. Now, I can't tell you what retirement means to a dog because I'm not sure they know what they do. But, spoiler alert here, I don't think the dogs care if they win. But that said, it's just a wonderful, we've had some wonderful dogs. We have half a dozen of the top dogs in the country competing here in the Beverly Hills Show on Easter Sunday. So it's going to be a really wonderful competition.
Now, you're so busy, of course, doing the show. Do you get an opportunity to meet any of the dogs or their trainers and handlers?
Well, I do. It's a wonderful day because, you know, these shows are so large, and you'll have 2,000 dogs being judged during the day, both in the breed, the group, and, of course, the best in show competition, that they're all backstage in other arenas, and you get to walk up and down the aisles there and see all the owners and the handlers and the dogs themselves getting primed and preened for their moment under the lights.
What's also wonderful is the Beverly Hills Dog Show, unique in its own right. There is a Beverly Hills flair to this show that's a little different from the one that you do in Philadelphia.
It sure is. This is something that David Fry and I kind of composed ourselves, and it's we just call it a dog show done differently. And we take some of the, you know, the glitz and the wonderful, a glitter of Hollywood, and we combine that with the elements of a great dog show. But we try to give it that little bit of extra, that dog show done differently. We redesigned the Best in Show arena at the end of the show to resemble more of a red carpet version of the Victoria's Secret runway. It looks a little bit like a catwalk for dogs.
And did I see that there will also be some celebrity dogs showing up?
Yes, we have a whole bunch show up during the day. And oddly enough, many of them bring their dogs just to sit there in the stands and root. And that's kind of fun. Yeah, we had some wonderful people out of the beautiful Bo Derek is there, and Ashley Tisdale is there. It's a wonderful group, and we have a great time. We have, you know, great backstage stories, as always. But mostly it's just we don't take ourselves as seriously in this show.
We're looking forward to it, to coming up on Easter Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, the Beverly Hills Dog Show presented by Purina on NBC. You've been keeping very busy. I see you're also doing some work with the folks from Big Blue Bug. Can you talk about that a little bit?
You know, I love to do funny commercials, and they came to me last year with this idea, and I said yes. I said, but I don't want to be a spokesman for you. I want to be an anti-spokesman. So I do these very funny series of ads for this company, and last year it was about the fact that I didn't want to do a bug commercial, and it was the fact that I'm an actor. I don't do bug commercials. When you have an infestation in your house, what do? Pick up a phone and call an actor? No, you don't. So anyway, the ads were such a smash hit for them that we did another one recently, and I do my first home inspection. But I'm speaking nothing but battle cries from Shakespeare.
I love it. That sounds wonderful.
And this poor woman in yoga pants greets me at the door. So they're very funny, and it's just, you know, kind of regional type of. But I love that style of humor. So where other actors would say, "Oh no, absolutely, I can't do that," I go, "Oh come on, I have more fun doing those." And to me, it's just another extension of the world of entertainment.
John O'Hurley with us here on Downtown. You're a big golfer and a golf fan as well. Did you get to see any of that wonderful finish to the Masters?
Did I get to see it? I don't think I got to see anything else. I was glued to that show I was glued to that 4 days. I wouldn't leave. It was, I was in my heyday last Sunday. I had the Masters at, 6:30 in the morning in L.A., but then the Red Sox started and the Celtics started, so I put them all on tape, and I got to spend the whole day with my Boston sports allegiances plus the Masters. It was a great day, and all turned out victorious. Yeah, I think Tiger's victory underscored, I think, what is wonderful about sports and America is that everything is ultimately redemptive, that no matter how bad it gets in your life, you can always come back.
Speaking of baseball, John, will you and your son be out doing any more baseball games, throwing out first pitches this summer?
We have quite a few to tour. Yeah, we do half a dozen minor league parks. I don't think we're going to be I haven't been asked yet by the Portland team, hint, hint. but I we were going around a bunch of parks because, you know, we do our tandem singing together, plus throwing and catching the first pitch, and it's kind of fun for the two of us to do that together.
You had a great run in our Downtown Madness competition this year, but fell just short despite a huge turnout. Jeff Daniels knocked you off, and what can you do? You can't win every year, but it was another tremendous run.
Well, I'll tell you, I don't mind losing to somebody of Jeff's nature there. He's an awful nice guy. What an interesting actor he is. I enjoy him very much. You know, we both did a play called 5th of July back in, I want to say, 1982 or 3 in New York. And actually, I replaced his character. And it was, and that's the first time I got wind of him as an actor. But he has become kind of a tour de force. And oddly enough, is going to be up against Bryan Cranston for the very prestigious Tony this year for Best Actor in a Drama. And I have no idea who's going to win. Obviously, I lean towards Brian because I think his role in Network is such a tour de force that it's tough to believe that he can do that every night. However, people have seen To Kill a Mockingbird and said it's just an extraordinary production.
Well, he beat Brian before he beat you, so you did go deeper into the competition than Brian. So I know there's a little pride there.
You know what? Again, that's because of my bug commercial.
That might have been the difference maker right there.
People, you know, it's very embraceable, easy humor to understand. And people, I think I'm rewarded because of that.
Now, John, I know you do this on Thanksgiving Day. Will you be live tweeting on Sunday?
Yes, actually. And you know what I love is when people send us videos. So I'll throw this out there. Send us videos of your dog watching the Beverly Hills Dog Show. That's the ones that we enjoy the most. They are so much fun because the dogs really get into it. And there's my favorite one of all time is where the dog is watching the TV screen, is barking, runs up to the screen, kind of throws his paws up there to look at the dog, hops down, and then goes behind the television set to look for where the dog really is. Think about the calories that dog burned and the neurons that are necessary to have that type of intellectual exercise in a dog.
My Ginger will watch. I hate to say it. She, as a rescue dog, she knows she could never compete, and it's made her a bit judgmental.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. So you kind of just say that's enough.
She doesn't want to turn the channel. She wants to check them out. But you have negative comments, a wag of the tail, a dismissive turn away. That's how she is.
That fur is a little puffy in the back.
Exactly. But, well, we will be there to watch, like most of America, this Easter Sunday, the Beverly Hills Dog Show presented by Purina, 1 p.m. Eastern time on NBC. John, always wonderful to talk with you. A very happy Easter to you and your family as well, and we'll catch you again soon.
Oh, thank you. God bless you, Rich. And remember, it's a dog show done differently.
It's John O'Hurley here on The Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. When we come back, oh my goodness, we cover some ground. Philosophy, a new home for one day at a time, and a great George Siegel story from Stephen Tobolowsky after this break here on Z62 Retro Radio.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
Spring is here, and that means biking season. And the experts at Slipping Gears have just what you need. They're the area's premier full-service bike shop, located at 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. With outstanding service and a huge stock, they've got the parts, accessories, and the expert advice you need, as well as the fastest repairs around and a great selection of new bikes. Open Monday through Friday, 9 to 6, Saturdays, 9 to 5, and you can shop online anytime at slippinggears.com. Slipping Gears, 753 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With the network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Pretty sure this should be considered a public service announcement. So in advance, you're welcome. I just went to the Ground Round in Bangor and had the most amazing food from their special menu. First, I got the Reuben Egg Rolls, which is all the flavors of the classic Reuben sandwich wrapped in a crispy egg roll and served with savory garlic smoky paprika sauce that has this slight kick. It's so good. To go with it, I ordered the Memphis Fries, French fries loaded with pulled pork, drizzled with barbecue sauce, topped with chopped pickles and diced onions. If your mouth is watering right now, head to the Ground Round on Audlin Road in Bangor, groundround.com.
Success. For some, it's the result of luck. For the Maine Black Bears, it's the result of planning, determination, and hard work. Success may have brought you financial rewards, and now in many ways, life isn't simpler, it's more complex. Your choices impact more people and can have longer lasting effects than ever before. At ClearPoint Financial, we understand your challenges. We can help navigate today's changing financial landscape and help you pursue your financial goals. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. See what ClearPoint Financial can do for you. Call us today at 307-7718.
Since 2005, Pineland Farms Dairy has been making the finest cheese in Maine. Our cheddar, Monterey Jack, Pepper Jack, Baby Swiss, Feta, and cheese curds are all made with natural milk from Maine. Find Pineland Farms cheese at Hannaford supermarkets, Shaw's, Whole Foods, and other great shops throughout Maine and New England. Visit online at pinelandfarmsdairy.com. Maine cows, Maine milk, Maine cheese. Pineland Farms.
Penobscot Theater presents...
Caption! My dad and I were exactly alike.
I see everything!
A groundbreaking new musical about seeing your parents through grown-up eyes.
Caption! My dad and I were nothing alike.
I'm Superman!
Winner of 5 Tony Awards, including Best Musical.
My dad and I...
The Maine premiere of Fun Home, April 25th through May 12th at Bangor's Historic Opera House.
Daddy, come back!
Tickets at 942-3333 and penobscottheater.org.
My dad and I...
Our next guest on Downtown is a regular cast member on ABC's The Goldbergs. Also appeared recently on an episode of Law & Order SVU. And of course, he stars in the acclaimed Netflix series One Day at a Time, which is not coming back for a fourth season there, but may have a new life somewhere else. So we talked about that and much more in a recent conversation with friend of Downtown, actor and storyteller Stephen Tobolowsky. I was going to introduce you, paraphrasing a line from One Day at a Time, and introduce you as our favorite Jewish cowboy.
Oh, gosh. Well, that I'll take it. You know, I began, I guess, my career as a cowboy in fourth grade at Claire Richards' birthday party. And we were going to ride horses for the first time in my life. And I got a horse that was called Big Gray, even though my mother called it Old Mike, and forever. So it was Big Gray. And they hoisted me up on this big old horse, and he had been around that track with the kid on his back one too many times. So this horse wasn't going anywhere. So he wandered about 10 steps from the barn and started eating off of a bush. And I'm jumping up and down on his back, and I'm kicking him in the sides, and I'm doing everything. And that horse looks back at me and snorts with those big old nostrils, and he isn't going anywhere. And all of my friends, all the kids at Claire's party, they're going down the happy trail, and I'm there. And so I cry out to the skinny man in jeans. I go, you know, Big Gray, he's not moving. He's not moving. So the skinny man in jeans walks up to me and gets a branch off of a tree. And in my little mind, I mean, talking to you now, I think that branch had to have been about 6 feet long, something like this. And he picks that branch up and hits Big Gray right across the head. Oh. And that horse took off. And the skinny man started laughing as I'm galloping now, first time ever on a horse, galloping down the trail past my friends, and the skinny man's yelling, "He's a going now, ain't he? He's a going now." Laughing, laughing, and I realized my whole life that what I always need to do is be my own skinny man in the jeans. That so often all I need to do is hit myself in the head with a 2x4 and I will start again. So whenever times get bad, be your own skinny man.
I hope Big Gray is not the horse that communicated somehow with that horse many years later in Iceland.
Oh, no, no, no. Now, the horse I had in Iceland was a little SOB named Little Bit of Red was the translated name. Now, I had one horse called Little Bit, and I had another horse called the Icelandic people are not good with names. They have so many horses. You know, in Iceland, there are more horses than people. And so they name horses just like Foot or, you know, like one eye bigger than the other. You know, they just identification names. But this horse was nasty. I think a lot of your listeners kind of know that was a, for those who don't know, that was a really important moment in my life because we were riding up on a volcano in Iceland, Mount Hekla, if you want to look it up on your map. And I was hit with a giant wind, and the wind lifted me and the horse off the ground. I'm not kidding about this. And carried us several feet, dropped us, and then Little Bit of Red took off with me on his back, and I got thrown onto a lava flow where I was thrown. And I guess I didn't know the severity of my injury at the time. I was going in and out of consciousness all day, but I ended up breaking my neck in five of the vertebrae were broken, multiple breaks, and the central vertebra was crushed. And I had the injury that Christopher Reeve had, but with much different effects, all because I was an anatomical mistake in that my neck was built exactly the opposite of most human beings. And so the curve of my neck went out instead of in, and it pushed a lot of the blow into my shoulders so it didn't snap my neck off. And so I feel it. I feel it, Rich. Whenever the rain comes, I feel it. So it's still with me, but I'm still walking and can move fingers and toes. So I'm very happy.
That's a remarkable story. Stephen Tobolowsky with us. I was rereading your book, My Adventures with God, and, yes. And I went to one of my favorite chapters, The Speed of Everything. And wonderful stories in there, starting with you having dinner with your sons and trying to figure out what they're talking about, trying not to fight and get Anne upset. But some great wisdom and thought in that chapter about, well, us hurtling through space, yet oblivious to the movement around us.
Right. My son is a scientist. He's an organic chemist. And now, actually, Rich, he's teaching at UCLA. So I'm really happy. He's got a job this year as a kind of teaching incoming organic chemist. I think he teaches graduate kids. Anyway, the idea is that we're on the Earth, which is turning about 1,000 miles an hour. And the Earth is rotating around the sun. We know it takes 360, but I think at enormous speed, we're moving around the sun as well. And at the same time, on the Earth, spinning, moving, turning, everything in the universe is moving at what I used to think was called the speed of light, but now physicists are calling it the speed of everything. That everything is moving at the same time, and yet we here are unaware of all of this motion that we're going through. And it made me wonder, how is it possible that my family could sit around this table and discuss, because all of us are moving at speeds that are incomprehensible to us, and yet we're able to sit around a table and have this discussion. My son, I'm a person who's religious, and my son is a person who is not. And that has led to so many amusing discussions around the dinner table. But I'll tell you, you know, at the end of this week, Rich, we're getting into the Holy Week. As everyone knows, Easter is coming up, but also Passover is coming up. So this year I went and told my son, because he really isn't much into the observation of anything, like many people. And I said, Robert, you know, if you don't feel like sitting here at the table and doing Passover, he goes, are you kidding? I love Passover. I wouldn't want to miss it. And I go, why? He goes, I don't know. I like hearing the story. I like eating the food. I like the matzah. A lot of times our holy places become tradition. Now, this is something I learned. I've been taking Hebrew for what, like 10 years? Can't learn a thing. My mind does not absorb it at all. But this one little thing I learned, the word kadosh, have you heard that word, Rich?
Kadosh? I have, yes.
Kadosh is the Hebrew word. It's translated in the Bible as holy. But that's not what kadosh means. Kadosh doesn't mean holy. Kadosh means separate. And that's all it means, separate. Hmm. And the idea was when the word, we have three tenses that describe time, you know, past, present, future. But back in the olden times, people did not have that sense of past, present, and future. They sensed that everything was a continuum. The past and future were all part of the same thing. And it was all part of a plan. And so in Hebrew tense in the Bible, the things which have come to pass is the past. The things that will come to pass are the future. And the present is now. And to set aside the everyday was kadosh, things that are separate from the motion of what we would call past, present, and future. What is set aside? What is separate? And I realized that quite accidentally, for my son Robert, the holiday of Passover became something that was set aside. And it actually, against all of our plans and wishes, have become holy. He wants to be there. He wants to hear the story and eat the food and say the blessings. It's really remarkable. I'm calling it the Easter, the Passover miracle. That's what I'm calling.
In that chapter of the book, The Speed of Everything, you talk about the fact that as we are actually hurtling further away from our home, as we're really, with the universe expanding, heading away, and we're either in a situation where everything has meaning or nothing has meaning. Where are you on that continuum right now?
I think everything has meaning. We just don't necessarily know what it is. I know we're on Skype now. And if I turned on my video, which I'm not going to do right now, I'm sitting in my little study where I write my stories, and behind me are all of these books so your audience can get that vision in their head. And you know how people have things that they set in their bookcases, little special things, photographs, family pictures, sure, paintings their children did in third grade. What? So I looked on my shelf behind me before we started because I wanted to see what is on video that Rich is – am I going to be doing this interview in my underwear? No. But I turned around, and one of the things on my shelf is a stick from the ground, not anything that we hit a big gray old mic with. But I realized, why do I have this stick? And I remember the reason I have this stick is it's from Iceland.
Oh, my.
And I picked this stick up off the ground when earlier in that day, I was almost killed. Before, I was almost killed. That's twice in one day, Rich, for those people who are keeping score. So the first time I was almost killed, we were riding up a trail that went over a river and then up a set of switchbacks. And there was a family behind me that brought their children along, little kids that didn't know how to ride. And so I'm riding my horse. This is a different horse now. I was riding a mare called Myra, and the kids' horses go wild. They start running while I'm on the switchback going up the cliff that's about 40 feet high over the river. And the kids start galloping behind me, which upsets my horse, but they force me off the switchback, off the trail, and my horse, with her front hooves, grabs onto the sheer wall of rock.
Wow.
Now we're off the trail. We're hanging 30 feet over the river. We have 10 feet to get to the top, and I would not have believed it. Now, obviously, now the horse is vertical, and Annie, my wife Annie, she was going up a different part of the trail, and she sees this and screams and yells out, "Grab on to the mane!" Because anybody who knows when a horse is running or going crazy, he ain't going nowhere without that mane. You grab a hold of the mane, and you're going to stay on that horse. So I grab the horse's mane. The horse is hanging on to the rock face, and of course, the stirrups and all that stuff don't help because we're vertical on the wall now. I'm hanging on to the horse's back by holding onto the mane, and Myra begins climbing up the wall with her feet. I had no idea a horse could do this. Like a cat going up the drapes, she puts one hoof in front of the other and pulls us up. And she climbs the other 10 feet to get to the top. She reaches the top and falls into the ground on a heap and collapses. I fall on the ground too, but we were alive. The head of the Icelandic riding team came up to me and said, "She did everything she could to save your life. She can't ride anymore today. She gave you everything. So we're going to switch horses. You'll have another horse for the rest of the trip." And that's when I got that little SOB, little bit of red. But when I was resting there on the ground for about 20 minutes, trying to catch my breath and crying and running over to kiss this sweet horse that saved my life,
yes,
on the ground was a stick, a stick, a stick. And I said, "I'm going to keep this stick to remember the day this horse saved me." And I pulled that stick. It ended up in my luggage. I brought it home. It's on my bookcase now, and it commemorates the day that became quite another kind of day. At that point, I thought I was the luckiest man on earth. And within 2 hours, I was going to be senseless, knocked senseless, going in and out of consciousness. Finally, I think I got home that night from the hospital, 1 a.m. from Reykjavik in a neck brace, and it was still daylight. But I kept that stick, so it has become set apart. It has become something that's holy just by keeping it here on my shelf.
As well it should be. That's it's an amazing story. You went to visit your dad. How was the celebration of, was it his 97th birthday?
97. Oh, my gosh. Dad is one of these guys who thought his retirement years, his golden years, were going to be great because he loves sports. And he's going to be able to sit and watch sports to his heart's delight. And then he lost his eyes. Couldn't see. And now he can't walk. And it's difficult for him to hear. And consequently, it makes him hard to remember. He has difficulty remembering things because he has no framework.
Right.
97 years of age, but I have to say, this visit home, he was so positive and so optimistic, heroic, if you ask me, and just delightful, cracking jokes. His memory was relatively good considering, you know, how bad it can be at times. So we had a great time. We had Mexican food, and we told stories of visits past. We told stories about Mom, who he still misses terribly. She passed away in 2007, I believe. And, I just realized I broke my neck in 2008. Thank goodness Mom did not know about any of that stuff. There's a blessing. So anyway, it was a great visit, Rich. It was very great, very positive. We all loved the guy very much, quite heroic.
I'm so glad to hear that. Let's talk a little bit, if we can, about what is going on with One Day at a Time. Netflix decided after three seasons, enough is enough. There are business things here that I don't begin to understand. But what seems to be complicating things, there are other outlets that would love to have the show, but there's some kind of deal in the contract. What is it, a three-year window that the show cannot be on another streaming service? Is that right?
I think it's maybe at least that onerous. It's pretty difficult. The issue is that if an outlet is simply a streaming service like CBS All Access, it's years before they're able to get One Day at a Time. So they're virtually out of the running. The only network that could really take One Day at a Time is a straight up normal network like the CW or Fox or so, where you go to a studio, you know, where it's on television, network television, not just on your computer. We have so many various windows as to the ability for us to move. The easiest window for us to move would be the one you speak of, and the one I kind of mentioned is not a streaming service, a regular straight-up network that maybe has streaming. And then we would be able, if a network picks us up, get back in business again, probably, I mean, I'm guessing as a mid-season replacement.
Wow.
Shows, the new season is, new season shows are being shot right now. And they usually start airing in September, and mid-season replacements go on in like January, which means One Day at a Time would have to start shooting in September. Something like that. So right now, we have been invited as one of two shows to go to this convention in Austin of networks to, and that's going to be in June. So hopefully something will happen at this convocation, and One Day at a Time will develop another home. And I hope it does. But, you know, everything is a tell. You know, the gambler's tell that always it's a tell. And this tell is a little depressing. And that is that it shows that Netflix, one of the criteria of Netflix is not the quality of the show.
Clearly.
Is not the reviews. None of that. You know, we were 100 on the Rotten Tomatoes critic scale.
Right.
I mean, almost nothing is. The shows were fantastic. The audience loves it. Netflix was hesitant to have another network pick us up because they said, we don't want another network to have a hit with the show, with one of our shows. And I was talking to Mike Royce, our executive producer, and I'm saying, like, they can only have it one of two ways. You can't have it both ways. Either we're not doing good enough at Netflix in terms of numbers of people watching to deserve a fourth season. Then, you know, they can't be worried that we're going to be a hit somewhere else. Either there aren't enough people watching the show or too many people watching the show. It can't be both at the same time. So I have been on terrible shows that have succeeded. I've been now on a wonderful show that's been canceled. I got the news at a most inopportune moment. I was doing the Goldbergs, and they had called me and said 5 minutes to do one of my scenes. So I'm in my trailer, and my phone goes off, and it says Gloria Calderon Kellett. And I'm going, it's our executive producer, she and Mike Royce. And I'm thinking, the only reason she's calling me now is we have good news, because it wasn't time for Netflix to announce And so they're not going to announce early that we're not going to be picked up. I'm sure they're announcing we're picked up, get ready, and start writing new shows. So I'm going to go to the set to do a funny scene in another show, and I get this phone call, and I pick it up and go, "Hey, Glory, what's up?" And she goes, "Steven, it's me and Mike Royce." And I'm thinking, good news, good news. They're right. Both there. "We have some bad news."
Oh.
And my heart and soul spilled out all over the dressing room floor. I was shocked and devastated. And they said, "Our little dream of a show is over for now until we could find another." And then I get a knock on the door and they go, "Steven, we're ready to go do your scene.
Come be funny."
Yeah. So, that was a lesson. That was a lesson. But the philosophical takeaway I had from that was something I learned on Broadway. I did a show on Broadway, and that is, whether you like it or not, there's always going to be a closing night.
Very true.
If you're in this business and you have no choice, if it's closing night and you wished it were sooner than it is, or like One Day at a Time, that it came far too soon for this show and for this cast and these people. So anyway, my fingers are crossed. I love this group of people and these writers, and maybe something good will happen at the meeting in June.
Well, we certainly hope so. Our fingers, even toes, are crossed as well. Before we went on the air, you and I were chatting through Skype. I was telling you a story about my little boy. I brought up Art Linkletter, and you have an Art Linkletter story?
I do. You were bringing up something. If you remember Art Linkletter, he had a little part of his show, House Party, and later a standalone show called Kids Say the Darndest Things.
Yes, indeed.
Right? And they would have a group of 10-year-olds, and Art Linkletter, who was an enormously charming man, would come up and ask the kids questions like, "Who does most of the work around your house?" or just ordinary questions. And the kids would say these incredibly odd, horrible things that were hilarious. And you could see it on the internet now if you want. Just go Kids Say the Darndest Things, Art Linkletter, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So I'm on the set of the Goldbergs, and I'm sitting next to the absolutely great George Segal, who plays the grandfather on the show. And I don't know about you, Rich, but when I was in college, George Segal was the guy all of us actors wanted to be. He was kind of sort of the Hugh Grant of my generation.
Yes.
He was a handsome leading man. He could do comedies or dramas. He was always troubled in the shows. And he, I guess his big first movie was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and he played Nick on that.
Yeah.
So I never have scenes with George. And I sat down next to him. I said, "George, I just absolutely have always loved you and have always wanted to be you. And how did you get started?" And I thought he was going to tell me an Edward Albee story, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Right.
And he said, "Steven, it's an Art Linkletter story. I was 10 years old, and I was told I was going to be one of the kids on Kids Say the Darndest Things."
Oh, my gosh.
And we were taken into a room before the show starts, and a man came up to us and said, "So, this tall man here," and they showed a picture of Art Linkletter, "he's going to come up to you and hold a microphone, and he's going to ask you this question. What does your mother hate to do first thing in the morning? And you're going to answer this." They had a group of staff writers.
Oh.
Staff writers.
Bursting my bubble.
I'm sorry to burst this balloon, but it's time. The staff writers wrote the kids' responses.
Oh.
And this guy drummed it into the kids. And I said, "George, you mean the kids say the darndest thing was phony?" And George had the biggest smile. He goes, Yeah, Stephen. And that's when I knew this was the business I wanted to be in. Completely phony, and somebody else is going to give me good things to say.
That is wonderful. What a great story. And yet my faith shattered, but in a happy, smiling kind of way.
So sorry.
It's quite all right. Stephen, always a delight for us to talk with you. We appreciate you making time for us here. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Hope things go very well for you in June. Hope you and your family have a joyous Passover, and we look forward to talking with you again very soon.
Thank you so much, Rich. My love to you and everybody out there in Maine.
Stephen Tobolowsky, always a treat. We get to talk to him. And oh, my, why can't we get everybody on Skype, Carrie? That sounds so good.
I think that is our preferred version of communication moving forward.
Yeah, that is
Skype,
fantastic.
Skype first.
Seriously, it's like he's right here in the room. You close your eyes, you think he was sitting across from you.
Yeah, the sound quality is amazing.
Well, we certainly wish Stephen and everybody associated with the show good luck in June as they try to find a new home for one day at a time. When we come back, we talk a little baseball. Sean McDonough back doing Red Sox games. We'll chat with him next on Downtown.
Don't feel like making dinner tonight? Don't worry, Angelo's Pizzeria has got you covered. With locations in Bangor and Hamden, Angelo's is never too far from where you are. Pizza made from the finest ingredients and fresh dough, sandwiches, and subs. Calzones, pasta, chicken, burgers, salads, and more. You can find something for everyone in the family at Angelo's. Give them a call at 942-5553 or stop in at 499 Hammond Street in Bangor or 102 Main Road South in Hamden. That's Angelo's Pizzeria, open daily from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on into Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor.
Welcome to Greenacres Kennel Shop. How many?
Two dogs and a cat, please.
Remember us?
Rex, Sparky, and me, Fiona.
Of course, this way. Your coats are all looking so shiny. Bowl for three.
Ruff!
I'll take a side plate. Dog food's not really my taste.
Rex, try the Nutrisource. Delectable.
Yes, Master Sparky. Greenacres Kennel Shop only wants you to have wholesome, healthy food. So we prefer to work with small, family-owned companies who focus on pet foods.
Any specials this evening, Paul?
Of course, Master Rex. The usual lineup of dog and cat foods from Pure Vita, Natural Planet Health Extension, Signature.
How are they prepared?
Green Acres offers dry food, wet, freeze-dried, even frozen raw food to fulfill your fussy feline fancy. Now, because you all come to Green Acres Kennel Shop so often, your meals are deeply discounted as part of our frequent buyer program.
Wow, sounds like we're the special ones.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, where every pet is special. 1653 Union Street, Bangor, greenacreskennel.com, and on Facebook. Takeout also available.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, our home away from home.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
The Common Loon Public House is a casual, relaxed place for great food, drink, and company in the heart of the village. The perfect spot for a proper pint and a hearty or healthy meal.
Open 7 days a week with lunch on Thursday and Friday and breakfast on the weekends, the Common Loon has an eclectic menu, influences from over the ocean and close to home, serving up favorites for lunch and dinner like fish and chips, poutine, and pub burgers. Don't miss Wing Night Wednesdays, live music Fridays in the new second floor space, and weekend mornings, the menu features hard-to-find dishes, a full English or Irish breakfast, and home to the only wood-fired brick oven in town with a variety of pizzas and British pasties. Imported beers, local brews, and signature cocktails, happy hour specials 3 to 5 and after 9 every night. The Common Loon Public House is the place to be for EPL matches, rugby, the Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics, Bruins, and Black Bears. If you follow it, they can show it on their 7 HD screens. At 36 Main Street in downtown Orono, the Common Loon Public House is the place to visit before, during, and after the game. And we're back on the best of downtown for your Sunday morning.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket.
Our next guest on downtown, one of the busiest guys in broadcasting, doing several different sports for ESPN. He was covering March Madness, also did a little work on the Masters, and returned to the microphone broadcasting Red Sox games over the course of the last week, a job that he'll do couple dozen more times at least this season. Always a pleasure when we get to talk with our friend, the great Sean McDonough.
It's always nice to be with you. I hope you're doing well.
Absolutely. And you've had yourself quite a busy few weeks here, you know, logging some serious miles.
Yeah, I've been bouncing around the last 2 weeks. Was to the Final Four to broadcast that for ESPN International. ESPN has the broadcast rights to the Final Four in every other country in the world except the United States, and then down to Augusta to host the par 3 contest on Wednesday, the day before the Masters started, and then picked up with the Red Sox on radio for the last 7 days. So it's been a busy stretch the last 2 weeks, from Phoenix, Minneapolis, Augusta, Boston, New York, and now back in Boston for another day or two before we go back to Arizona for about another month.
Well, it was great to hear your voice back on the Red Sox broadcast again. How did that whole thing come about?
Well, when they made the decision last fall to move on from Tim Neverett, you know, I think they were trying to figure out what they were going to do, and they reached out to me and asked if I had any interest, and there's just no way with my commitment to ESPN that I could do all the radio games, and I think at this stage in my life I know what I want to. You know, it's really it's a grind to be on there all, you know, every day. You know, the Red Sox tonight are starting, or tomorrow night, start a stretch of, you know, 20 games in 20 days. And, you know, there are very few off days during the baseball season. So, you know, I wasn't very interested in that, to be quite candid. And then they called me back a month or two later and said they were going to kind of hodgepodge it, at least for this year, and have a rotating group of announcers alongside Joe Castiglione. So they asked me if I'd be interested in being a part of that and not having to do anywhere near all the games. So, you know, they basically said you can do as many games as you'd like and you can pick which ones you do. So I'd be an idiot to say yeah, no to that. So we decided on about 30 games, most of them home games. You know, a couple of games at Yankee Stadium, obviously. But I'm glad I said yes. I did, because I thought it would be fun, and it's been a lot of fun. It would obviously be more fun if the team was playing better.
Well, let's talk about that. You've seen this team up close a little bit, struggling like few have struggled after winning a World Series championship. And it starts with the starting pitching, although last night Nate Eovaldi looked pretty good. It was the bullpen that let him down. Do any of those starting pitching struggles seem like the kind of thing that they can't overcome eventually?
Well, I think the one who is totally lost right now is Rick Porcello. In his last start, I mean, he just looked like he was completely lost and had nothing that he could go to. You know, at least the others, as you said, Eovaldi had a good start last night. Price was there the last time out. So was Eduardo Rodriguez. You know, Sale, the line wasn't good. You know, he gave up 4 runs in 5 innings, but at least the velocity was back up, so that's not a concern that his arm's hurt and can't throw hard or as hard as he used to. You know, he's just as lacking the feel on his slider, and, you know, that's been a great weapon for him throughout his career. So I think if he can get that back, he'll be fine, because I don't think he's hurt. There was some speculation that he might be. But of all of them, Porcello's the one I'd worry about the most, because it just looks like he doesn't have any command and any confidence in anything right now.
Some troubling news about Dustin Pedroia as he came out last night. He had had to DH in recent days, and as much as he would love to see that knee allow him to get back out there, it's troubling him once again, and who knows what his future holds.
Yeah, you know, it's tough. It's a big thing to come back from, especially his age. And, you know, they've taken it very easy with him, with an eye toward, you know, protecting that knee and making sure that they're not pushing it more than they should early in the year. So, you know, the fact that it's happened, particularly when they were being very careful, is, as you said, very distressing, to say the least.
Otherwise, is this simply a hangover from the World Series, or are there other issues at play, do you think, with this team?
Well, I don't know if it is. You know, I know Alex Cora is asking me, saying he doesn't believe in that sort of thing. You know, I don't think they're as bad as they played. They probably weren't as good as they looked last year, too. I mean, to win 108 games, 119 total. You know, everything went their way last year. You know, a lot of guys had what might turn out to be career years. But I think, you know, there are enough guys who have a proven track record. Mookie Betts, most notably for me, among the everyday players, you know, you have to believe they're going to get it together and get back at least close to what they have demonstrated that they can be and usually are. So, you know, I wouldn't give up hope yet, but with each day, obviously, they dig a bigger hole. And, you know, they're just not playing good baseball in any phase of the game right now. You know, the defense hurt them again last night. Nunez made a very sloppy error. You know, as you said, Workman came in. He hadn't given a run all year. He was not sharp. You know, you can't walk the number seven and number nine hitters, especially in that lineup, because you know, the Yankees are playing a lot of guys who probably would be in the minor leagues if they didn't have so many injuries. So, you know, they're just doing a lot of things that you can't do to be a good team and win games, and it's a lot of things that they didn't do last year.
We're talking with Sean McDonough here on Downtown. I look around the American League, though, and I have to think that when all is said and done, they'll be right in the mix for a playoff spot, because there are so many teams that, well, I know the commissioner doesn't like to use the term tanking, but there sure seem to be some teams that aren't giving their best to try and win this year, at least in terms of roster makeup. Is that bad for baseball in the long run?
Well, yeah, I think it's very tough on the fan bases. You know, when you're a fan of the Baltimore Orioles, and for the most part they've been bad for a long time. They had a couple of good years a few years back, but for the most part they haven't been very good. And now you say, realistically, it's probably 3 years before we're going to compete again. You know, that's a very sobering reality. You know, Toronto, I think, is closer to being a competitive team. They seem to have more prospects, particularly prospects who are closer to being ready to play in the majors. It's hard to identify who Baltimore's prospects are. And as you said, there are a couple other teams around the American League, Kansas City, for sure, maybe the Chicago White Sox, to name a couple more, who probably realistically are not expecting to win this year. So, yeah, I don't think it's good for baseball when you have a lot of teams, at least a few teams, that aren't really trying to be competitive right now.
Sean, it was a tremendously exciting college basketball tournament. Virginia was such a great story after being eliminated by Maryland Baltimore County in the first round last year. Did you have a good experience with your broadcast of games?
I really did. I was happy for Virginia. I do the big Monday game, as we call it, at ESPN every Monday night. It's always an ACC game. So we've had a lot of Virginia games in recent years, and just really admire Tony Bennett. You know, I think he's one of the very best coaches in the country. You might even say right now he's the best with what they've done in the ACC, which to me, there's no question it's the best college basketball conference. When you're, you know, when you're winning the regular season title 4 out of 6 years in a league that has Duke and North Carolina and a lot of other programs, you're doing a great job. And, you know, because especially because that loss the first time ever for a number one seed to lose to a 16 seed last year, you know, Tony's taking a lot of grief about, oh, he can't win in the tournament and blah, blah, blah. So I was kind of glad he shut that whole thing down, and just admire him a great deal as a person. You know, he's a great family guy. He's a man of considerable faith. He's great with his players. He's great in the community, and he's a terrific coach. So I was happy for them. I think it's a classy program, and it really starts with the coach.
Sean, I heard you on one of the Red Sox broadcasts last weekend talking about the late Nick Cafardo. He was a guy that you knew very well, and of course, strong connections with your family to the Boston Globe. I didn't know Nick very well, but he came on the show a number of times. But seems to be that rare individual that nobody either in the media world or athletes and coaches, no one has a negative word to say about him.
You know, that's true, and I think I said it last time. You know, if someone said a negative word about Nick, I would question that person's judgment because, he didn't have a mean bone in his body. He addressed everyone. I thought he was very fair in his journalist. He wasn't a bomb tosser, but he wasn't also afraid to acknowledge something that wasn't right, a team that wasn't playing well, particularly the Red Sox. But he was universally well-liked and respected around baseball, and I think that's why it hit so many people. It's one of those things we're still having a hard time processing.
I'm sure. Well said, Sean McDonough, ESPN, and so excited that you'll be on. What, about 25 or so more Red Sox games this year?
Is yeah, that... I think I've done seven now, and the total was 30, maybe 30, 31, 32. There's a couple dates that are still up in the air where I may have a conflict. But, about 25 more, and I'm really looking forward to it. As I said, I hope the team starts playing better because it's more fun when they win for everybody, including the broadcasters, and particularly given what the expectations were. It's been really fun. You know, Joe Castiglione is a wonderful guy and a lot of fun to be with. So I'm looking forward to the rest of them. And the next one's in about a month or so when the Houston Astros are at Fenway.
Well, we'll look forward to hearing you then. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Sean. As always, thanks so much for making time for us, and we'll talk with you again down the road.
Always my pleasure, Rich. Thanks.
That's Sean McDonough here on the Best of Downtown for your Sunday morning. Big thanks to Sean, Stephen Tobolowski, and John O'Hurley for joining us. And thanks to you as well for making us a part of your day. I'm going to go home, eat me some chocolate. I got a bunny. I'm going to start with a head. That's what I always do. Go for that bunny head.
Got to go. Yeah, the ears have to be devoured first.
Yes.
So the poor thing can't hear what else is happening.
Right. That makes it so much better along the way. Hope your day goes well. Join us tomorrow afternoon. We've got a live downtown. Christopher Price of Boston Sports Journal gives us a little preview of the NFL draft. We talk with Michael Powell of the New York Times, a terrific column that he did recently on Colorado football. And some people up there in positions of power who aren't necessarily sure that colleges ought to be playing football anymore. Will be an interesting conversation, to say the least. Alan Adams of the Main Edge with movie reviews, and Emma Wilson introduces us to another entrepreneur from the Top Gun program tomorrow. We'll see you at 4 o'clock right here on Z62. You're gonna